Batter Up.
Ah, there we go.
Are we live?
Are we live?
Hi, Facebook.
Hello, Facebook. I'm waiting till my actual stream shows up on my screen. Because I'm going to try to actually monitor the questions myself this time. We'll see how well that works out. But anyway, hello, Facebook. Welcome to A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and this is episode 54 of A Pod of Their Own. And I am joined this week by my lovely co-host, Linda Surovich. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So this is another Q&A live pod. So go to the Mason Avenue Facebook page, ask us questions. You're already there if you're hearing this right now. But tell your friends to come ask us some questions. But before we answer the questions that show up in the feed, which I will attempt to monitor myself. Last time we had the lovely podcast dad, Brian Salvatore, helping us out. This time Brian is otherwise occupied, so I'm going to attempt to multitask. We'll see how well that goes. But in the meantime, we did get some questions ahead of time, so we'll start with those. So we'll start with a dear friend of the show, Ellen. She asked us, what do you think about all the comments that Polar Bear was subjected to after that unflattering pic went on Instagram yesterday? She asked us that on Twitter. And I can only assume that she means the, like, picture during, like, when all the Mets were posting the, like, Suns Out, Guns Out pictures. And Pete Alonso, like, there was a picture of him, like, was he running? And he kind of looked like he had a bit of a belly in the picture. And so there was some questionable comments surrounding that photo. Yeah. Fat shaming isn't cool, you guys. It doesn't matter whether it's, like, you know, it doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter whether it's an athlete or a regular person or a man or a woman or anything in between. It's not cool to fat shame.
Or someone you don't like. Like, yeah. Have a good reason to not like them and make fun of them for that thing. And not for having a body type that is within the perfectly reasonable, like, universe of healthy body types. Like, Pete Alonso has something on his tummy other than, like, hard cut muscles. That is a normal thing. Healthy people have that.
Normal? Normalize dad bods 2020. That's what I say.
Well, no, so I think this isn't the first time either. And I remember he got pretty angry about it too one time on Twitter. Like he just absolutely like wrecked somebody on Twitter who like dared to make fun of his appearance. And I don't blame them for getting angry. Like you said, like if there is a legit reason to not like Pete Alonso, okay, but there is no legit reason to not like Pete Alonso. So,
nope.
And also it would be different if he was open about it. Like Dominic Smith was kind of open about like, you know, needing to lose weight and, you know, how he felt so much better after he lost weight. But like we said, there's no ideal baseball body. Like
one of the things that's cool about baseball.
Yeah.
Yes. Agree.
Is that you got like your Jose Altuve and you've got Aaron Judge and Pete Alonso and, you know, it's
Bartolo Colon.
Yeah. And Pete is a healthy dude. Like that's mm-hmm. not, you know, there's no like need to raise awareness of his unhealthy habits. Like he's 25. He is strong as hell. There's nothing to worry about there.
And yeah, it's not up for us to decide if it affects his on-field performance. Like he was fine last year and I don't think he looks any different from last year, so I don't think it's us for us to, you know, complain or judge, or that's for him and his nutritionist. That's between the two of them and between the Mets, and stay out of it.
Yeah, seriously, like no, his doctor, don't be his doctor. Stop armchair physicianing this stuff all the time. And it's not just with players' weight. Like we saw it with Dominic Smith. We are yeah. very familiar with this as Mets fans. People like policing people's weight and their habits, and like, stop it. You're not Dominic Smith or Pete Alonso's doctor, so you have no say.
And also, it's people who are just miserable at home. Like, I'd like to see you hit a dinger 500 feet. Like,
yeah, right?
Peach just fine.
I think when someone made a comment about, I can't remember if it was Dominic Smith or somebody else last year, but somebody made a comment and I was like, as you at home on your couch lick the Cheeto dust off your fingers. Like, come on, man. Seriously?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to judge baseball players as I eat Doritos. That's not how this works.
And I spent all of quarantine eating Doritos and Insomnia cookies. Like,
my kids call them spicy chips. And I think that's just the best name for Doritos ever, spicy chips. Now they fight with me about getting spicy chips. That's less cute, but the name I think is pretty cute.
Yeah, spicy chips is good. Speaking of massive dingers, though, and I know we're going to cover this later, but I would just like to show everyone that Yay! I'm wearing my Cespedes backflip shirt today.
That's a good one.
I am extra hype about Cess right now, and we're going to talk about that because, you know,
yes,
we have a whole separate section of the show dedicated to Cespedes and how hype we are. So, yeah, Ellen pointed out that the negative comments are not cool, and we totally agree with that. It's really silly. And the one I saw in particular, I think it was because Vaz retweeted it, was some Yankee fan like posting the side by side of Pete Alonso and Luke Voit and being like, which one would you rather have on your team? And I was like, Pete Alonso.
But of course his handle was like 27 rings too. Like, yeah, he was like this parody. Stereotypical Yankee fan. Like, and also I think somebody pointed out like Luke Voit, like, the past three seasons doesn't even have the same amount of home runs that Pete hit last year.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder who I'd rather have on my team. Tough, tough decision.
Speaking of
that. Also one of those annoying things, too, where, like, I don't want to hate on Luke Voit. He's just fine. He never did anything to me. But now here I am having to, like, slam him. And that's not where I want to be.
No. No one wants to be there. These constant, like, artificial, like, forcing of beefs between the Mets and the Yankees are, like, really annoying. Yeah, like, I hate that.
There's a certain, I guess, reporter.
We use that word generously.
Likes to add to that beef, but that might be a topic for another day.
Does his name rhyme with Randy Bartino? You heard
actually,
nothing.
I just took a big gulp of my seltzer. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, what seltzer are you drinking tonight, Linda?
Share with our viewers.
I have AHA watermelon lime. It's so good.
Yeah, because somebody at work just recommended the AHA. And
get on it.
What flavor is that?
Watermelon lime.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
The ginger apple is very disappointing. There's just not enough flavor to it, but all the others I've had are really good, and the watermelon lime is like my drink of the summer.
I know we had a cookie rating podcast, but this is a seltzer rating podcast now.
I have the La Croix coconut.
Good, classic.
Classic
stuff. Yeah, good summer. But also, Craig Goldstein turned me on to the hibiscus flavor.
I do love hibiscus.
I was kind of scared to try it, but I was pleasantly surprised with the hibiscus.
It's nice.
So that's been my go-to at work.
I haven't come across a bubbly that I don't like. Every bubbly seems to be just absolutely boss.
I think I've had, bubbly I've had.
I haven't tried them.
Super, like, basic, but I'm a fan. In any case.
Yeah. Speaking of Vaz, because I mentioned him because he's the one that retweeted the Luke Voit thing, to dunk on the Yankee fan, to be clear. But he in the comments just pointed out when Pete Alonso, like, totally dunked on these assholes last year because, like, somebody replied to one of his photos on Twitter last year in November, lose weight, fat ass, and Pete replied, very akin to what we were saying, how does it feel to watch this fat ass hit 53 home runs and 120 RBIs from your couch? And I just remember being like, totally.
Hell
wrecked.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, love to watch Pete own these dudes online. It's the best. So yeah, don't fat shame. It's dumb.
Not you don't like it.
Don't like it. Disapprove. Disapprove. So okay, we got one more question before the pod started, from Blue Shirts Breakaway on Twitter. And they asked, you can only lock up one long term. Who do you lock up between Conforto, Stroman, or JT Realmuto?
That's really hard. Fair question.
It's not easy at all.
No.
Not easy at all.
That is really hard.
And I can only choose one?
Yep.
I'm going to say Realmuto, even though he plays the most important position and would give them such an advantage. I'm ruling him out because I have no emotional connection to him.
Yeah.
And I don't want an emotional connection to him. So that just leaves me between Stroman and Conforto.
I would probably go Conforto because he's pretty young. And he's been so solid, except for when he was, like, recovering from a devastating career-altering injury and then just, like, righted the ship and has been just really solid. He seems like the kind of guy who could easily play until he's, like, 37, 38 without losing a step.
See, I was leaning Stroman because...
No wrong answer.
Yeah, there's no wrong answer here. Yes. All three are. I would like D all of the above, but you know, I know that's not an option.
Paging Steve Cohen.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and you get a contract, and you get a contract, and you get a contract. So I was only leading Stroman only because their pitching depth is kind of piss poor. And they have nobody for next year, so Stroman's kind of important.
And Stroman's a mensch. I love Stroman.
I know, and he's just fun. He's so. But then his comments the other day really sounded like he wanted to test free agency, which is totally his right. But I want him to be a Met forever.
Like, but he also keeps liking all these tweets that people post about wanting him to be a Met forever, and I'm like,
I know, Stro, you're playing with our emotions here. Big one.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. Allison, you're the tiebreaker.
I am. I know. It's really hard.
You could go Realmuto.
I know. I could.
It's a forever tie.
I could. It's like they each have such good arguments that are so distinct from each other is the thing that makes this question so genius and difficult is because, like Linda mentioned, Realmuto plays probably the most key position, and the Mets do not have a long-term catching solution.
And they haven't had one since, like, Piazza.
Yeah, basically.
No, but, and also, like, nobody has one.
No.
Like, yeah. I mean, there are, what, like, three teams who are well-situated at catcher for the medium term right now? I mean, really, like,
it's... And one of those teams was the team with Buster Posey, and Buster Posey has opted out of the season.
Yeah. Well, even he's been, you know, switching at first. Like,
and he's on the downside of his career, but he was one of the few, like, long-term... like options. And the Mets haven't had a long-term answer at catcher in a very long time, and obviously they don't have one coming up through the system. There's no Adley Rutschman's here. Like, there's Tomas Nito is not the answer, folks. Breaking news.
Or Ali Sanchez.
I mean, we know that Alvarez might be good. We know that the Mets
he's a ways away though,
but he's a long way away. And so that's really the argument for Realmuto. I think that
Realmuto, I think, is leaning towards testing free agency. He said the contract talks haven't really developed, so
I think he and the Phillies are not really on the same page right now, but that can change. I mean, DeGrom and the Mets weren't on the same page until the 11th hour, so who knows. But I think that argument is strong. I think Conforto, I think, makes the most sense from just like a he's been a Mets staple perspective. Like, he's been a reliable producer on this team. I think he has the most established history with this team of the three. So I would say, like, as far as not only production, but who we have an attachment to, it's Conforto. Yeah. But Linda made a good argument for Stroman because of the Mets pitching situation, and that is only exacerbated by Noah Syndergaard's Tommy John surgery and not knowing how he'll come back from that, especially considering the odd conditions in which he is recovering. Tommy John's surgery recovery is not a given as it is, and in a global pandemic, it's certainly not a given when he can't, you know, train properly, recover properly. you know, with the appropriate staff and whatnot. So, like, really wanting to solidify the future of the pitching is a really strong argument for Marcus Stroman. I think in the end, all three have really good arguments. I think I'd pick Conforto as well. So that's my pick.
But like you said, Steve Cohen can change all that.
I'll take 2 out of 3. I'm not greedy.
The great meatloaf said 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
I would even take the 2 that I didn't pick. Yes, like, that would also be fine. That would be fine.
Yeah. I would not complain.
Yep. I would, if, like, I picked Conforto, but if it's between Conforto or Stroman and Real Muto, I'm going Stroman and Real Muto. 2 is better than 1.
Or if, like, he signed, like, Stroman and then gave Pete an extension, I would be okay with that, too. Like, that's also acceptable. Or DeGrom, who has an opt-out in a couple years.
I think Conforto is probably the most solid pick if you're thinking about both short-term and long-term needs for the team. So we have a question in the comments from Alex. Question about the DH for the Mets for the 2020 season. JD, Cano, Cespedes are possible Mets DHs, in my opinion. So I guess he's just asking a more general question about how the Mets should utilize the DH, who should DH. I mean, to me, Cespedes is the default DH.
Yeah.
Obviously, JD, not to besmirch your mans, Linda, but JD does have his struggles on the defensive side. But I will take those all day long if it means preserving Cespedes's legs. So
I wrote the season preview for my mans, obviously, so I had to discuss this very topic, and then I also discussed it with our friend Bradford over the Daily News, because before times it seemed like they wanted JD at third, but there was no DH at that point in spring. But then he recently had a Zoom interview after, like, practice, and he said he's still been practicing a third and left. So in my season preview, I said, is this really the season you want to figure out if he's your long-term third baseman or your long-term left fielder? Like, it's a wacky season. Or do you do it now because the season is wacky and might not mean anything? Did you try him out to see if he is your long-term solution at third base? So I think JD might be a little low on the list because, like you said, Cespedes probably has his first dibs on it. And Cano, I would say that you got to keep, if Cano's healthy, we can't speculate on Cano.
Get the vibe from Cess that he wants to be in the field.
Yeah, I think so.
I think he's really been, like, doing a lot of drills out there in front of media, like, and that makes sense because he's playing for a contract for next year, and he will do better if he can prove that he can play in the field, even if, you know, NL does have DH next year. He's still a more valuable sign for anybody if he can serve multiple roles. So I think Cespedes is going to want to be in the field, but, like, I think.
And Dominic Smith, too. He's your other option at DH.
Well, and Alonso, for that matter. Alonso played almost every game last year, and he did great with it. But, like, this is also a really, like, breakneck pace. And it might be, you know, it's not something you're going to want Alonso to do, like, on a weekly basis or anything. But, you know, over 60 games, if he gets 5 or 6 DH opportunities, that's like 10% of the season. And you give like, let's say 60% of the season to Cespedes. That still gives you 30% to kind of play around with Cano or whoever needs a day here and there. Like, I mean, and
can I throw out a name? Are you ready for this?
Oh, God. Yeah.
Jed Lowry.
I thought you were going to say Melky Cabrera because that's what we're going to see. We're gonna see that.
Or even, you know, Ramos, if you want to give him a breather and still keep his bat in the lineup, because then you're going with full up Nito, and I don't know.
You know, it's not I mean, it's just it. The Mets are always going to find a way to DH somebody who has no business DHing.
I did see. I did see. I think we discussed this in Amazing Avenue Slack, but I did. I did see a steaming hot take from a rival blog that shall not be named, saying that Mariznick should play instead of JD Davis, and I was like, I'm going to go with a no, hard no on that.
There is literally no reason.
Yes.
When you have all these other options, you're going to go Mariznick? Why?
I mean, Mariznick should get playing time.
Yeah, obviously.
Defensive replacement.
Defensive replacement.
Yeah, the seventh inning, and it's fine.
Yes.
Like, the occasional start against a favorable pitching matchup when no other notable bats are being rested or set for other reasons.
Like, not like on a Sunday, like Terry Collins loved to do, or like everybody loved to do.
Sunday lineup.
Like, Sunday lineup. The Sunday scaries are back.
Oh no.
When you never clinch the playoffs, you can put out your playoff clinching lineup
every Sunday. But is Jake Mariznick a lefty or a righty?
It's a righty.
Probably neither.
Okay, so that makes it a little more flexible then. If you're facing a lefty and you want to take Nimmo out.
Yeah.
I have too many windows up on my computer, so I'm Googling Jake Mariznick on my phone.
I wrote Mariznick's spring preview, and I specifically addressed this issue. And no, I absolutely do not remember what it was.
I'm waiting for your answer. Like, I addressed this issue, and I don't remember.
I got nothing.
And I'm blanking.
Yeah, he's a righty. That's what I thought.
Okay, so if you're facing, like, oh, wait, you're not facing Kershaw this year. I don't even know who's a tough lefty. Who's not?
I don't even know if he has platoon splits.
Yeah, I don't know.
He doesn't? We're not, like, big ones? Boy, I'm
You are clearly invested in Jake Mariznick.
That the pre-global pandemic fourth outfielder preview didn't have me at my level best. That was
like I think he's a valuable bench piece. He's fine, but he should in no way be starting over my man's. And I'm not
Absolutely
saying that
not.
Because of bias.
No, no, that's subjectively true.
JD was one of the best outfielders in the entire league in the second half last year. Not defensively, I will give him that. But, like, offensively, he was up there with, like, Yelich and Bellinger. Like, he was on fire the second half of the season. And I remember Keith Hernandez always saying, too, he won a batting title in the minors. Like, the bat's always been there.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know if you, like I said, it's a wacky season if you want to see if he can improve the glove to a point where he can be here every day, because Cano is not going anywhere. So if they do end up adopting the DH eventually in the National League forever, I think Cano is going to end up being there, and then McNeil is going to be your second baseman.
Yeah and
like a safe bet.
The Mets do have one of the more formidable lineups in baseball at this time. If you like look up and down it, there's not a lot of weakness there.
I think they were just ranked sixth by MLB.
Even that seems low.
Yeah.
Honestly. I mean, like, I'd go, like, four. Like, there's definitely teams that are better than them. The Dodgers have
Let
a better lineup.
Probably
the Twins, because even Bitch Garver can hit a bajillion home runs somehow. Yeah. And I think they were ranked above the Yankees on that list, too. So
They were. Let me,
Take that, dad bod.
Yeah. We'd rather Luke Voit on our team. But, yeah, so, I'm psyched. The DH, I mean, like, I am an NL baseball fan. I don't like the DH, but it helps the Mets. Objectively, it does.
Okay, I have the list. Number one, Dodgers, Twins, Astros, Yankees, Athletics, and then Mets.
You could have told me the Athletics ranked anywhere on that list. and I would have absolutely no prior knowledge with which to argue that placement one way or another.
And then, let's see. Then the White Sox, Cubs, Red Sox, and Angels are last with Trout and Ohtani and Rendon.
How?
They're ranking the Angels 10th.
I don't think that's... No.
Well, but what? Who else is in that lineup?
But that's enough.
By itself.
It is.
You have two MVPs. Wait, Rendon won an MVP, right? Or did he not? Yeah. Am I misremembering?
I think so. Or he should have. Either
way. Or he should have.
I don't think he
was. I feel like he was.
But I do think, like, what the Mets have really working for them is depth, finally.
And yeah.
All of this is theoretical because the entire team could be quarantined by Thursday and you just never know. So, but there's not really a hole in the lineup. Like, Rosario is the clear weak bat of the group. And I think Wilson Ramos is, you know, good for a catcher and moderately above average overall. But, like, that's it. Like, that's your, and I guess if Cano has another bad year, that's a hole, but that's still, like, there's no one up there who you're like, ooh, we have to.
And Ahmed was really good last year, too, in the second half. I think he had the most hits of, like, any shortstop in the National League in the second half.
Yeah, yeah. He was really good.
He settled in good time.
Yeah. So
we're always waiting on the breakout of Ahmed Rosario, TM, but maybe it's this year.
I'm still having him as my guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it helped him last year. He went from extremely below average to average. So
we're moving.
By the transitive property of our guys.
Our dudes.
I mean, I feel like having Seth Lugo as my dude helped him too. So
he had a lot to be proud of.
Yeah. So we have another question from Brad Fox on Facebook. Any bars have TV outside to watch opening day that you know of? I feel like this is
That's a Maggie question.
That's a Maggie question because she's the one that lives in the city.
We are not city folk.
So I don't know. And I'm thinking about, like, the various sports bars that I know of. And to my knowledge, none of them have, like, the TV outside. But I would always hype Lion's Head Tavern, which is a Mets bar on 108 in Amsterdam or 109 in Amsterdam. Go to Amsterdam and 108 and walk north and you'll find it. But it's right near the Columbia campus. It's where the Lion's Head. But it's like a legit Mets bar and it's adorable. And I went there last year for opening day and it was a lot of fun. So I don't know if they have outdoor seating. If they don't go there. But if they do, that's probably a good spot.
I found it. Outdoor seating now open daily.
That's great.
That's awesome.
I'm gonna tweet them and find out if they'll have the game on somehow. Sure hope so. They're really great though. Like a nice neighborhood type spot. The food is ridiculous. It will, like, go directly into your aorta and, like, not pass go, but it'll get you where you're going.
Yeah.
But what are you guys doing for opening day? I'm just gonna watch my house.
What day of the week is it? What day? I'm so confused. What day are we even on?
Yeah, what year is
it? What year? Who are you?
I think it's a Friday. Because you're starting on the 24th, right?
I thought the Mets were...
Did I make that up? 23rd?
23rd. Is this the 24th?
This is really scintillating live TV right now. But yes, whatever day of the week it is, I'm just gonna... Because I love to go watch with people, but I also am not quite ready to be with people.
No, especially indoors.
Indoors, for sure not. The 24th is their first game.
Cool. Is it during the day or is it a night?
It is a 4 p.m. start. That seems very...
Well, I might actually be working, so that might answer that question.
There you go.
So I'll be watching at my house, maybe? I don't know.
Or I'll be watching in my office on Gamecast.
Yeah, I like...
Very exciting.
In late July is going to be all of a blur for me because I'm moving. And so, like, that weekend is the weekend that we're trying to move all of Michael's stuff out of his apartment. And so, like, but I think on Friday we'll probably be watching the game, so.
I think you could probably find yourself a three-hour block.
Yes, of peace. So.
Or at least, like, sit and wrap up, like, plates and glasses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It all really lends itself to
start packing
fiddly things.
Yeah, so. can have baseball in the background while we pack, which I never thought would happen. So there we go.
What better thing to have on in the back?
But in the meantime, we are answering your questions. You should absolutely, if you aren't already, be listening to all of the other pods on our amazing podcast network. They've been doing fantastic work keeping everyone entertained during the extended pandemic off season that has been 2020. The Miners guys are hard at work. You know, all of the, now that there are 60 slots on the Mets big roster, we have lots of people who many of the fan base have never heard of before that the prospect guys have to cover. They've been giving updates on the KBO, etc. And we've got Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. And we've got Rob Wolf's podcast is always helping us remember some guys, TM. So you should be listening to all of those pods if you aren't already. But in the meantime, we will keep answering your questions. I don't think we have any new ones right now, but maybe Amazing Avenue Slack has questions for us. I'll ask them.
Well, I already alluded to keeping Ahmed Rosario as my dude, and I would love to know who your dudes for. Allison, you had said Brad Rock, maybe, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so in addition to Seth Lugo being my mans, Brad Brock is my Birdland boy, so he came over from the Orioles. And so I have a special attachment to him for that reason. And I think that he is underrated, and I think he might actually be good this year.
I was so excited they re-signed him. So excited.
Yeah, I was pumped
about
it. He was
good for the Mets last year.
He was. He was. And, like, at the time, it was a really under-the-radar signing because, like, they picked him off the scrap heap, off waivers, basically, because he was doing horribly for the Cubs. Prior to
but
that,
fluky horribly too. Like it wasn't
fluky.
Totally.
Yeah, like his
like,
walks were like
settled in.
A lot
like,
of
he
walks.
He was walking like six per inning or something.
His control was like out of control. You know, pun intended. And so, Thomas, I just got a ping from Thomas being like, I log on and Allison's talking about Birdland. Of course she is. Yes, I am.
The brand.
Your brand.
My brand. It's strong. Brad Brock is a dude who's been a solid setup man for many, many years now, during some good Orioles times and some very bad ones, too. And he was pretty consistently good, and so, he's getting older now and maybe on the tail end of his reliever downspin, so it's possible that he won't be able to replicate his second half with the Mets last year. But if he does, then that's a very solid relief pitcher. He you know, really dropped the walks when he came to the Mets. The Mets noticed that he might have been tipping his pitches, too, and I think they did a lot of work with him to really help him with that. So that's also something that might account for the fact that he had much more success with the Mets than he did with the Cubs last year.
I think he has an option, doesn't he?
Yes. Okay. And he's been playing around with a new pitch as well. Who knows? I mean, 2020 might not be the year to experiment with new pitches given everything else. But prior to COVID, he had been experimenting with a new pitch that, the Mets coaching staff was really excited about. So we'll see if we end up seeing his, like, special changeup. That
you know, I would say experiment
about.
With whatever the hell you want.
Exactly. It might
just
actually be the time.
There are 60 games. If you want to start batting lefty just for no reason at all, do it, man. Run the bases backwards. See what happens.
Yeah, who's going to tell you no, really?
Seriously.
Manfred might find a new thing he can implement, just like every other wacky idea he's come up with.
Yeah. Linda, do you have a man's besides JD?
I'm just
going to
say I can't pick JD, right?
This
isn't
like
it's nice to be kind of a bubble guy, and I feel like JD really did so well last year, but he's also like still not like he doesn't have exactly a starting spot locked down. I feel like you could get away with keeping JD.
Okay, all right, then I'll.
I mean, that's just like I don't know.
Yeah, Seth Lugo might be too established at this point. I don't know.
Well, I was going to say, is Stroman okay? Can I pick Stroman? Or is that another?
He's more established than JD.
He's more established than
JD. He's the Mets' number two starter at this point. Yeah.
Can I go rogue and just pick Jed Lowry?
My man's Jed Lowry.
Yeah. You can bring your JD Davis magic and use it to make JD Lowry play a game of baseball. By all means, Linda, use that magic.
I'll send the vibes to Jed Lowry. He does wear number four, which has always been my lucky number, and it's been a good number in Mets history.
It has.
So, good vibes only. No vibe vampires.
No vibe vampires. So I feel like maybe I can get the four vibes rolling towards him. And Anthony DeColmo said he's actually looked really good. Like, he can't run, but he said the bat's there.
He can't move at all, but, like, he can stand there and swing a bat.
Yeah! I mean, he hit a double off DeGrom the other day, and he made it to second alive.
I guess. So, I guess that's the bar now.
He didn't die on the way to second base. Like, I feel like that's improvement.
It's true. You know, it's unfair. If I can give, like, anytime Yoenis Cespedes moves, if I can, like, throw a party, I guess I should give Jed Lowry the same sort of difference, maybe.
Or Flappy Boy.
The same!
Less.
So, you know what? I'm all in on the Jed Lowry trade.
Yes. I'm so in favor of this, Linda. Work your magic.
Okay.
Make Jed Lowry a factor.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Breaking news.
No! No, Allison, no. No, no, no. Don't go there.
Okay, I'm not going to say it.
Back tightness is what we have on DeGrom. So that could mean literally nothing, or his career is over. Oh. Or any place in between those things.
I feel like this happened one other spring training and he had a bad mattress.
Oh, yeah. He was one of the many Mets who, like, don't sleep on real mattresses despite being baseball players that make lots of money. It's like, why are you still sleeping on couches? You guys are rich now.
Yeah. Like, come on. Get a new mattress, Jake. You just signed a new contract. Get a new mattress.
Get a new mattress, Jake. Stop experiencing back tightness.
You know what it is about baseball that makes these men hit age 21 and just stop there?
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
Steven Matz is still, like, sleeping on, like, used mattresses and spinning cushions on his fingers. Like,
okay, the cushion
please?
Thing is, the cushion thing's pretty funny.
Cushion thing is cool.
It is cool. We'll give Steven that.
Yeah.
Although, that didn't, well, no, it was a neck. I feel like Aaron Judge had stiffness or tightness.
Yeah,
or
neck stiffness. Yeah. He left his inter-squad game with that. Unfortunately for the Yankees, who already have Aroldis Chapman on the COVID list, so, you know,
yeah,
not great for them. Okay, so we have a couple more things in the Facebook comments. We have, is there any talk of using Melky Cabrera as a starter? I sure hope not.
Oh, God,
no. Look, I also have a really, okay,
I sure hope not, sir.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I mean, look, the question is there any talk of using Melky as a starter, and I would wager legitimate money that they are absolutely talking about
it's the Mets.
My hope
they
is
are
that
absolutely, and he already had an in the best shape of his life.
Yeah,
we did. It's true. We dropped an in the best shape of his life storyline on Melky Cabrera.
The fact that they allegedly signed him because of the DH thing is what really just blows my mind. Because, like,
you have so many
DH stands for
designated. You don't need one.
Hitter. You're supposed to be able to hit. And Melky Cabrera, bless his heart, that is not his strong suit right now. Now, you may say, fielding's not his strong suit either. Absolutely. But, like, yeah, no, I'm not dying to get Melky Cabrera in my lineup.
Somebody tweeted a picture of him, Cano, and A-Rod, and they're like, we're getting the 09 Yankees back together.
That is, like, the Mets' goal, is to get the 09 Yankees back together. That's the shit they want. It's, against all reason and judgment, that's the shit they want.
Although
Why have a current winning team when you can have a 10 years ago winning team for half the price?
Yep. Former All-Star. Was Melky ever a former All-Star?
Yes, I think
probably.
He was.
Oh, so there you go. But I
mean, it was fine for a couple years, but, like,
yeah.
former All-Star is their favorite thing. Former Cy Young Award winner Rick Porcello is also on the Mets. Don't forget
another big
everyone.
Thing.
Sometimes I
really
forget
bad
that Rick
association
Porcello is on the Mets.
With Melky, though, because I went 2016. He was on the White Sox, and of course I had to go because Ventura was the manager at the time. Like, yes, I'm going. I'm going to go see Ventura, and this is awesome. And then Jake started the game, and I was like, oh my god, this is like the best game ever. I was like hopping up and down like a kid, like so excited.
The 2016 Jake was not the best Jake, was it?
But it was. It was a great
it was
game.
In this okay. instance.
It was a fantastic game. Jake was mowing them down, but they only scored one run.
Of course.
And then Melky Cabrera got into a fan interference call right in front of me. So that's what I associate Melky Cabrera with, was this. So, there was a foul ball, and the fan reached over, and then Melky got mad, and the fan ended up being ejected. But that wasn't the bad part, but that's what I associate Melky with, is this game, because then fucking Todd Frazier hit a home run off Jake in the seventh inning.
Oh, no!
Tied the game at 1-1, and then Matt Albers walked it off in the 14th inning! And it became the worst game I've ever been to in my entire life. They set a record for double plays. Michael Conforto struck out like 5 times and hit into a double play. He got booed every time he went back out to the outfield. It is the worst single-hand like game I've ever witnessed in person.
On the bright side, that can happen this year, because after the 12th inning, they play by Little League rules. And
that's true.
No.
And Matt Albers would not be batting. It would be a DH. I'm saying, how can you ruin a Ventura and Jake game? And I blame Todd Frazier for this.
New Jersey's finest, Todd
Frazier.
But then he did hit that home run against the Nationals last year.
It's
when
true.
I was
it was
there.
So
like,
good.
I forgave
so good.
Todd. I think that was.
I associate Melky Cabrera. I associate Melky Cabrera with the John Sterling, the Milkman. I'm just going to think of that every time. It's going to drive me insane.
I would too. And Gary, Keith, and Ron would never.
Oh, they would never. They would never.
And Howie would never.
Howie would never. No.
I can hear Howie's in response to the mere suggestion that he might. Like, just you can hear it in your head. Imagine somebody going up to Howie and saying, would you call Melky Cabrera the Milkman? And go, oh, I can't do it. Because it's, but you can.
Yeah, then Howie, yeah.
We have a fellow Amazing Avenue writer, Jack McClune, saying, not a question, but I'm going to root for Atlanta Brave Yasiel Puig, and you can't stop me. I'm not going to attempt to stop you.
I would root for Yasiel Puig under almost any set of circumstances. I find him an incredibly likable player.
As long as he doesn't start, like, doing the chop on the field.
Yes,
then
that is
I'm pro Yasiel Puig.
That's a good
time. Well, and I also feel like the Braves have a big gap to fill of player I love and wish didn't play for them on them, because I don't think Freddie Freeman's going to be playing for some time. So I'm
he's
fine
getting
with
better.
We stepping into that role of why do I love this player? He's a Brave. The Braves are terrible. But
yes.
So that's an important
it's
service.
I call that
by
I call that the Sean Doolittle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, why do you play for a team I hate? Why?
Proud
to soon be sharing a city, though, with Sean Doolittle. Very
there you go. There you go. So. The last update I saw on Freeman said he was feeling better, but still not practicing. He hasn't had a negative. I don't even know if he's taken a test yet. So he has not had the 2 negative tests.
Not
yet.
Great, Bob.
Yeah. But I mean, as long as he's been sick for as long as, if he's been sick for as long as he apparently has, like, going to be a really long time before he is in sitting up and engaging in long conversations shape. So
but I am pro Yasiel Puig at all times. I'm still heartbroken, like, about the fact that there were rumors he was going to sign with the Orioles, and I was so pumped about it. I was like, Birdland Yasiel Puig, I wanted injected into my veins, and then
And, like, he would have been, like, the best pitcher, I mean, the best player on the Orioles.
Yeah, he probably would have, basically. More or
less. Although Chris Davis was doing good in spring training before all this happened.
We'll see about that. So we've got many pressing e-scooter questions from Liam Murphy in the comments. He has said the following. How much do you think I could buy an e-scooter for? But does Porcello have an e-scooter? Should the Mets bullpen arms arrive by e-scooter? New extra innings rule is that there is a runner on second on an e-scooter starting in the 10th.
Also, it's just Michael dated, turns out. E-scooter is one of those words that stops sounding like a word if you say it enough
after time. A while,
I know.
Yeah.
I'm just like, what? And no, I'm confused about,
is
like,
that a word?
Is it a word? but yeah, no, I am pro bullpen arms arriving by e-scooter.
Yeah, I think that would be fine. I mean, if it's just like a step below the bullpen cart.
I would go ahead and say I don't have any strong e-scooter
takes.
No.
I know that many of our local delivery people enjoy them, and that's wonderful. If it gets me my tacos, I am fully in favor.
I would like to know Liam's analysis on e-scooters versus Segways. And
I was going to say, like, can they use a Segway instead? And you would have to wear a helmet, though.
Thomas makes the very valid point that a Met will crash the e-scooter inevitably.
They absolutely would. Or run somebody over. Like, they would run over Pete's foot, and that would be that. So, yeah.
It's not what you want.
That's e-scooters for you. But we had another question from Charlie O'Donnell. When is somebody going to give Bartolo a call? I want to know that, too. I have the same question, Charlie.
And I have a feeling Bartolo has been sitting there checking his phone like every 30 seconds, just making sure, like, is the sound on? Okay, yeah, it's on. Am I getting reception? Yeah, like, he is thirsty for some baseball, that guy.
And he's making it very obvious he wants it to be a Met. Like, anytime he's taking a picture, it's like, Mets gear, hello.
Well, he has at least one of his families local, so it's very convenient.
At least one of his families. Oh, no. Oh, no. We took it there. We did. It happened.
I'm not going to let Bartolo get by without
no, true.
A little mention of that one. No. No, I genuinely think, like, Bartolo very much wants to play, and if anybody was going to give him a call, they would have. But they're not going to, because he may have actually finally, for real this time, run out of whatever it was.
Whatever sustains him. Yeah.
But also, is it even worth it? Like, you're not going to see him bat this year. And that was half the fun. So,
I know.
I don't see a point.
Never DH for Bartolo Colon. That's
no, God, no. That was must-see TV, Bartolo and bat.
And he clearly thought so, too. I mean,
yes!
No one ever laughed as much as
he
Bartolo
did.
At the bat as he did. Good for him. I mean, it's...
he owned it.
I miss the Bartolo days in many ways, but also, like, yeah, no, don't get any ideas, Mets.
Vaz says bring that Harvey home.
Huh?
Well,
Vaz says bring that Harvey home, and I agree.
I've been on the Matt Harvey home trail for a while now. He didn't sign with anyone, did he?
No, he didn't sign, and he was, like, looking into, like, Korean, was it Korea or Japan? I can't remember. Those teams
would probably be a great fit either.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good deal, especially for someone who kind of likes the trappings of fame, which, I mean, all due respect to Matt Harvey. He seems to be that kind of guy. Like,
yeah, no lies.
The celebrity culture of, I don't know so much about Korean baseball, but Japanese baseball, they really, like, crank up the celebrity culture. And
they like their cult of personality, for sure.
They would have, like, several full-length crowd songs written for him with, like, multiple verses that everyone would...
Yes, it would be amazing.
It would be awesome.
And he would love that. Speaking of baseball in Japan, I've already seen Adam Jones hit multiple towering dingers, and it's been amazing. Yeah. And the content that I crave, and I've just been very happy about that. So shout out to Adam Jones.
Yeah, good for
Hell
him.
Hell yeah. He's a guy that, like, when the Mets were making their series of, like, remembering some guy signings that basically culminated with Melky Cabrera, I think, like, I was like, if Adam Jones were still a free agent, this absolutely would have been a thing, and I would have been so excited.
Well, they totally would have signed Adam Jones.
Oh, they would have. I think it would have been such a Mets thing for them to do, and I would.
They would sign any warm body at the right price if Fred Wilpon remembers him.
Exactly. Yes.
And I mean, if they're trying to put together the 09 All-Star team, you know.
They're almost there.
Yeah. We're getting there.
So, Vaz also asks, favorite pitcher hitting moment aside from the Bartolo Colon homer?
Well, I know mine, which is one of the first, I guess not one of the first games I took Ellie to, but one of the more, like, it's one of the first ones I took her to when she was, like, human and not like weird mushy infant. So she would have been just about 2 last season, and she and I, like, I took the day off from work and she and I went to a game. It ended up being the one where Noah Syndergaard pitched the complete game and also hit the home run to win the game.
Yeah, that one.
And
awesome.
We had the best time, and she loved every minute of it, and like, I will absolutely love the hell out of that game, and I will have a weird, like, quiet appreciation for Noah Syndergaard no matter what comes next in his career, because that was like an A+ kind of day.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I want to say the Thor 2 home run game, but what I'm actually going to go with, I think, partially because I was there, was the Mets debut with all the hits and RBIs. That
you
was awesome.
Were there?
Oh, so it was, if I recall, it was like a double header, right?
Yes, because they had a finish the night before. Was that it?
Yeah, and so, yeah. But I didn't see all of it because we left because of, I forget what reasons. It was just really late.
We were at the same game, and we also did not stay the whole time.
Yeah, so like, I'm not sure if I don't remember if I saw all the hits. I don't think I did. But like, I was there for the beginning. So,
okay, that counts.
So yeah, but that was pretty epic. The Mets debut against the Reds. That was good. Fun. That was good. I enjoyed
not your
that,
man's so. Lugo hit one.
Yes, that is true.
So not Lugo?
No. I do love that moment, but I'm gonna go with the Mets game because I think it was
really it cool. is hard because then I remember Ronnie talking about, like, he was just talking about how I think he was the last one to hit as a pitcher to hit home runs and back-to-back starts, and Matt's had a chance to, and then he did it, like, as Ronnie was talking about it. So that was kind of fun. But I know Jake's had a couple. Those were fun.
By the way, today is the anniversary of Jacob deGrom striking out the side in the All-Star game, just so
yes, I am
knows.
Wearing a Jacob deGrom shirt and to commemorate
the
that.
Good shit. Rich Resch shouts out the Mr. Koo double, which of course is a classic.
Oh yeah,
Mr. Koo.
One, I mean, it was weird. It was the very last game of the 2018 season, and it was again Noah Syndergaard, where he swung and his bat just broke in half.
Oh yeah, that was really funny.
Yeah, and I was there. I was sitting 3 rows behind the dugout because they were awful, and it was the last game of the season, and the tickets were really cheap, and I was like, when am I going to sit here again? And everybody wanted to go to the night before game, since that was David Wright's game. So I went to the David Wright game, and then I went to that game, and it was like, so I had a clear shot of him swinging, and then he turns and looks at the dugout, and is like, I don't, like, and so we're all looking at each other like, did he foul it off? Like,
what
happened?
What just happened?
Yeah, so just for, like, the weirdness of it, like, I don't know. I just kind of liked that moment.
No, that is, the weirdness of it is why pitchers hitting is good.
It's good.
Weird baseball.
My favorite, like, weird pitcher hitting moment is in Santana's no-hitter, his last at-bat, he almost got walked. And, like, he had no intention of, like, doing anything. And the look that he gave the opposing pitcher at the time, like, come on, man, this is not what I'm here for.
Don't,
like,
put me on base right now.
I will kill you. Oh, I have a good one, too. It was when they were playing, was it the Phillies? And they were beating them, like, 25-6.
Yes.
And Mickey Callaway was like, okay, I'm going to give the Phillies a break. I feel terrible. And Jerry Blevins got an RBI.
Yes. Jerry, I remember that. That was so good.
That was so good. Like, Mickey Callaway is trying to mercy rule them. And Jerry
I have to go plug in my computer. I'll be right back.
This is live podcasting, everyone. Live podcasting. Oh, and Rich Resch also shouts out Estes homering off of Clemens. That's a really good moment.
Yes.
Because
that was
screw
the best
Roger Clemens forever. Yeah. So anytime he gets embarrassed is good shit.
That was a good one.
So Liam Murphy asks, in all seriousness, do we think that the Braves run away with the division this year?
No.
Or do they barves? I think they barves.
Yeah, I'm not scared of the Braves.
I'm not really, like, I'm not saying that the Mets are the best team in the NL East by, like, any stretch of the imagination, no. But I don't think there's any clear NL East favorite. I know that the reigning world champions are in our division, but
I'm not scared of them either.
The Nats bullpen is still trash garbo, and they replaced Anthony Rendon with nothing.
Yeah.
So I don't see how they're a threat. They're like Dave Capobianco even mentioned this today in Slack. Like, the Nats lineup is like not actually that threatening on paper. Like, if you look at it right now, it's not. And so I don't think there's any clear runaway with the division team, Braves, Nats, any of them. I don't think that there's any scary team.
If you could even really have a runaway
in a 60 game.
Yeah, yeah. And also, like we said, I think we said it on last week's pod, there's no way to project. You don't know who's going to be quarantining, who's going to be sick, who's going to opt out. So I don't know if there is even a way to tell.
In what projections there are, I will say Pecota. So recently, Baseball Prospectus came out with the updated Pecota projections for the 60-game season, and it had the Nationals winning the division, like, very narrowly over the Mets. I think it was only by, like, a game or half a game. So
that seems reasonable.
Yeah, for what it's worth. Jake's going to be fine, and we're going to be fine, and it'll be fine.
So yeah. Oh, by the way, if you're just joining us, a pod of their own live, we're answering your questions. I'm Allison McCaig. I've got Linda Cervich and Maggie Wiggin here with me. We're answering all your questions. We've got Ray McKee. Congratulations on the socks, by the way, Ray. He sent us a very lovely picture of his dog.
The
with
picture
the socks.
Was amazing.
And so
a new favorite Mets fan.
Yeah, highly blessed image, Ray. We appreciated getting that. And I passed it along to Meredith too, because Meredith, our good friend Dr. Meredith Wills, is the reason we had those socks in the first place. She was the one who shipped them, so I sent her the picture as well, and she was very happy to see it. So he asks, how high a position do you think Jess Mendoza could achieve in a baseball front office? So I guess this is assuming that she, like, sheds herself of the conflict of interest, which, yeah, is already a thing because she's already decided that she's not, like, the Mets and her are no longer a thing. So I don't know.
It seems like she's happy with ESPN. I mean, I think she got reassigned. Like, she's no longer doing Monday Night Baseball or Sunday Night Baseball.
But yeah, is she not going to be with A-Rod anymore?
Yeah,
future Mets owner Alex
though.
Rodriguez.
So, I don't know. I don't know what her ambitions are. But I don't know. It seems like she's happy with ESPN. I would rather see a different woman than her that has, like, no conflict of interest. I would like to see a woman GM.
I also think she's kind of, like, she's almost established herself too much as, like, a baseball analyst to
be a
good profile of a general manager. And that's much more suited to, like, player development and things like that, which is part of what she did for the Mets, as cloudy as her role was. We do know some of what she did. But, like, yeah, I don't think that she'd ever rise to GM position just for that reason, because I think that people see her more as, like, an analyst type. But I don't know.
I mean, yeah. I think she has
she would be as good a GM as many GMs are currently. Like, she has the chops for it.
Yeah.
But if she wants that job, I don't know. She doesn't seem like she has shown an interest in kind of climbing the front office ladder. And I can't imagine why she would want to, like, spend her entire life, like, battling with a bunch of finance bros for you know, Jeff Wilpon's pennies.
Oh, God.
I mean, I know when the Mets were
doing... That's a thankless job.
Because the thing is, like, I know there's, like, a pretty, like, well-established precedence for, like, more media personalities and baseball analysts becoming managers. But I don't think that there's that much of a precedent in as far as them becoming GMs, is there? I can't think of a single, like analyst who started off in media who's now a GM. Or became one.
I feel like there might be one in basketball, I think.
Probably assume that any female person in this kind of situation is probably going to have a non-standard pathway to wherever they're going. So it wouldn't surprise me if, like, the first female GM does take an unusual route to that position. Like, it's
Me neither.
It's gonna be it's gonna be non-traditional regardless. So yeah, I feel like Jess Mendoza a lot. I wish things had been a little more on the up and up while she was here.
Yeah.
But I also kind of wish that, like, she wasn't, you know, held more responsible for her, you know, weird conflict of interest situation than other players have been, personalities have been. Like, I don't know. It was all just kind of weird and not great. And I really liked hearing from her. So I hope she reestablishes herself and some other kind of public-facing role.
Yeah. Be nice. That does it for the comments that we have right now. So I think it would be a good time to transition to walk-off wins. By the way, if you're just joining us, this is a pod of their own live. We answered questions. If you have questions in mind that you didn't get a chance to ask on the pod, we'll probably do another one of these in the future sometime. Let us know. Tweet at us. Our Twitter is always open to you lovely listeners, so please tweet at us. But in the meantime, we're going to
tell us your answers, too. Like, these are really good questions, and we want to know, especially, like, if help us out on this opening day outdoor bar situation question.
We're crowdsourcing this. New York City people, tell us where to
New York City people who don't have, like, two kids, no alcohol tolerance, because I am not helpful.
But we're gonna wrap up the show this week with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. We alluded to Linda's walk-off win, so I feel like she should go first. Linda Servich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
I blame the Mets social media team for this, but Cespedes.
Oh, he looks so good.
Well, he does. And even Anthony Giacomo the other day was like, he's clearly the best person in camp. Michael Conforto said he looks like a monster. And he's just having fun. Like, he grabbed the first baseman's mitt. It was Pete Alonso. He gave him his mitt, and he was having fun at first base. And today he made, like, a behind the back.
That behind the back.
Yeah, and then the whole underarm that he always did.
So good.
Oh my God. I've missed Cespedes so much.
I miss the swag.
And we're all living in it.
The swag. Yeah. Yes.
He's having so much fun. That.
I know. And then, oh my God, then he hit like a shot that got out in like 3 seconds.
3.25 seconds, which is how long it took me to rev up the Cespedes hype train. 3.25 seconds. I was like, engine's ready to go. Let's go, folks.
Let's go. All aboard the hype train.
All aboard the Yoenis Cespedes backflip hype train. Like, do it.
And then I think it was stupid SNY that like tweeted out, like, oh, is this your opening day lineup? And then it was like Cespedes, Alonso, my mans, Conforto. It's like, oh, imagine.
Oh, you know what? This is live radio, so I'm going to do a Yoenis Cespedes special. I'll be right back. You two continue discussing. I'll be right back. I'm going to make a quick wardrobe change.
Oh, okay. So, and then, like, I think the other day somebody tweeted it was the anniversary of the rally parakeet, and then I think today it was the anniversary of him winning the whole rough
jump. Back half of the season, we're going to get so many great anniversaries of Cespedes everything.
I know. Yeah, I was going to say now it's the second half of 2015, so yeah, it's going to be the 5 years since Yoenis did this, and Keep is just so much fun. And you know, he looks good. I was gonna say he was running the other day, and like
every video I watch of him in the outfield, and like zeroing in on his legs, I'm like, what are his legs?
So am I. I'm like, is he okay?
Did that waver?
Is he moving? Is he limping? Is he holding anything?
But then favoring just, one side.
Yeah, like
he looks great. Kilter. Like that, yeah. But it's all for naught because he really does look. I mean.
But like, even like,
it looks okay.
If there's no season, if you just want to give me a loop of Cespedes taking batting practice,
yes, please.
I would be okay with that. I would be
in
happy
favor of that content.
Yep. Yes. Like, if he's tired, he can switch off with Alonso.
That's
that would
fine.
That would be nice.
That would be acceptable. Like, have one go one day, one go the other day, and then like he was just hitting absolute moonshots and. I don't want his tenure as a Met to end on a bad note, because he was, like, the second half of 2015, like, there was no feeling like that, and it was due to him. A lot of it was due to him, and I don't want that to get ruined because of everything that happened after that.
I mean, for what it's worth, every time he has been healthy, he's hit. Like, he's always, I feel like, his legacy kind of gets a little bit muddied with other players who have been hurt and also not really lived up to their expectations. Because, yeah, he's been hurt a lot, but also he has lived up to his expectations when he has been healthy. And,
absolutely.
Like, that's, you know, he's still got it.
And one of my favorites, I'm pretty sure I was on recap duty that night. One of my favorite games to recap was in 2016. There were facing the Reds, and I want to say it was like Di Sclafani or something, and he was mowing them down, and I was like, really, you can't hit Anthony Di Sclafani, come on. And then they pinch hit Cespedes, he hits a dinger and then just leaves, like he left the ballpark, they won the game, and it was like just the best like mic drop moment, and I don't get like any cooler than that. Like, yeah, I hit a dinger, we won, well, let's go home.
I can only aspire in life to be a fraction as cool as Yoenis Cespedes. Obviously I'm not, like, I'm not nearly as cool as Yoenis Cespedes, but I'm trying. That's all that
and
matters.
Like the other day when he hit a dinger off Lugo and didn't even bother rounding the bases,
he was just like, whatever.
Yeah, all right,
I love him so much.
Gone.
Yep, that's the thing I'm most excited about this season is, like, two things. Basically, like, Yoenis Cespedes, like, existing at all and playing baseball, and Jacob deGrom three-peating the Cy Young. Even if it's, like, a weird, like, asterisk Cy Young.
Still counts.
Still counts.
He loses it and wins it next year, and then it doesn't count.
And then it doesn't count. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, then absolutely, that's the rule.
Exactly right. So, Maggie, what is your walk-off win for this week?
So I'm going to take it a little different direction. And this, as we speak, it may be technically out of date by now. But officially over the weekend, New York City caught its first day since March 11th with zero coronavirus deaths. And like I said, these things get updated all the time. But the fact that it was there, and maybe still is, I have not double checked, but like, that's huge. And like living through this in the city was just unbelievably intense. And you know, people always say like, oh, you know, you say like, oh, there are sirens all the time. Like, doesn't the city always have sirens? Like, yeah, but the fact that everybody was like, wow, that's a lot of sirens, then
you know it's something.
How many it was.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, it's
it's really scary right now outside of the city, and it's very scary being in the city and looking outside and being like, everybody just stay away. Like, don't, no, like we're working on this. But it was just like an immense moment of pride. And you know, the city worked so hard, and the people in the city worked, and like our hospitals and our you know, grocery store clerks and our bus drivers, and it has really been it's been a journey, and it's still like very much a journey. Like, nothing is over, but you know, it's been a while since we really had like an all around feel good sort of milestone, and that is a really good feel good kind of milestone.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, way to go, New York City. Zero coronavirus deaths for the first time since March.
And to think of just how, you know, it might not seem quick, but it was just months.
Like, yeah.
And so, you know, to get from
cat content.
Get it!
Yes. Cat.
So to get like from 10,000 cases a day to zero in
Well, not cases. The deaths.
Oh, okay, deaths, yeah. But
still.
I mean, it's still, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean,
it was still an impressive, yeah.
It was huge. I mean, we have had like 20,000 deaths. So to get that for a day at zero is immense.
Yeah, definitely. My walk-off win is like kind of oddly related to that, and I'll circle back to how it's related in a minute. But my actual walk-off win is the fact that today is my official last day as an Eagleton Fellow, as a Rutgers Eagleton Fellow, with the New Jersey Department of Health. So my fellowship tenure is over. So yeah, celebrating with some a pod of their own and a backwards hat wearing. Yeah, so I'm really psyched. I'm like proud of what I accomplished this year. And so the way it's related to New York City is, New Jersey similarly has successfully flattened its curve, to the point where there's a website called covidactnow.org, and they kind of take into account. So obviously there have been all these color-coded maps out there. You can see them, like whether there's like a rise in cases or a decline or just like a, you know, staying steady, and the states are color coded accordingly. But COVID Act Now, the difference between that map and the others is that they don't just take case count into account. They take a whole host of other factors into account, like hospitalizations, ventilator availability, like all sorts of things.
Transmission rate,
preparedness, testing rate, like all of the factors together, and sort of assess the states and how they're doing, how each state is doing. And basically, it's only the only states right now that are green on the map, which means the designation is on track to contain COVID-19, are Vermont, New Hampshire, and New Jersey. So I am, you know, as someone who spent the year with the New Jersey Department of Health during a global pandemic, which is not something I anticipated when I started this fellowship, I just feel
But would
like,
you recommend it to a friend or colleague?
I would not! But just the ever so small part that I was able to play in assisting the Department of Health with their response, I am so proud of my state and the fact that they've been able to contain this virus. Obviously, New York City got hit the hardest, but because New Jersey is adjacent and so close and so densely populated, New Jersey was hit very hard in the beginning. And, you know, it was another state where other states were like, oh, New Jersey, New York, stay away. But now, like, we're the ones that get to be like, other states, stay away.
Yeah.
We did ours. We're done. Not done, obviously. There's a lot of work still to be done. But I feel immensely proud of the work that New Jersey has done to contain this virus. And I'm just proud of the work that I did this year. And I'm really happy
we're
to
proud
have.
Proud of you, too.
Yeah, thanks, guys. We're proud of you.
You know, like, there's value in civil service, and I really enjoyed, you know, playing my role as a scientist to serve the greater good of the state I grew up in. So, you know, I'm really happy that this year turned out the way it did, and I'm so pleased with how Rutgers has handled this brand new fellowship that they had no idea how it was going to turn out. I think it turned out pretty damn good. And now I have this new job. So I'm excited to start the next chapter. Fellowship tenure over. Done. So that's my walk-off win for this week.
I remember when your walk-off win was starting this
podcast. Getting it. I know. That's so long ago now.
This podcast is older than my fellowship tenure. Isn't that crazy? So yeah, it's been a ride, but I'm pretty pumped about it. And yeah, I'm excited. So that's my walk-off win.
You should be.
But yeah, so thanks you guys for participating in the comments. We really appreciate it. We have some big announcements coming your way about a modified Dollars for Dingers program that we're going to launch this year. So
get excited,
get open your checkbooks, get ready. We're still doing Dollars for Dingers. It may not be exactly the same as it was last year, given everything.
We will not be packing like 50 of us into McKellar.
No,
it's not happening. No. Not safe. But we are doing a virtual Dollars for Dingers, and we're really excited to launch that for you guys. So be on the lookout for our social media, Amazing Avenue social media, for more information coming very shortly. So very excited about that. But in the meantime, you can go to AmazingAvenue.com, read all of our fantastic content. We are just 10 days away from opening day, and we have our season preview series launched in earnest. Articles every day on all the Mets players that are on the starting roster. More content about, you know, utilization of the DH, for example, various other pieces about opening day. So we're really excited to get started, even though, you know, all of us understandably have complicated feelings about the baseball season starting. We're still excited about it, in spite of ourselves. So go to AmazingAvenue.com. It is here. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow this show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. How about you, Linda Surovich?
At Linda Surovich.
And you, Maggie Wiggin?
At Maggie162.
Follow each of us on Twitter. Please subscribe to the podcast, to our amazing, amazing suite of pods on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts from. Rate and review the show. It really helps. The intro and outro to the podcast that's going to be on your feeds tomorrow, Wednesday, is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting. Catch you next time, Facebook. Thanks for joining us. Bye, friends.